Welcome to the LRIS Q&A podcast. This podcast features questions on public safety, labor, and employment issues submitted to us via our website, www.lris.com. Questions are answered by LRIS Director and noted labor attorney, Will Aitchison. LRIS and Will Aitchison do not provide any legal advice. Listeners to this podcast and visitors to the LRIS website should consult with their own lawyer for legal advice. LRIS is not a law firm, and our employees are not acting as your attorney. The information contained in this podcast and on LRIS.com is general legal information and should not be construed as legal advice to be applied to any specific factual situation. Will, we have two questions today from the Big Sky State of Montana. Here's the first one. Our firefighters local is going into binding arbitration, and we received a request from the city attorney to informally interview our witnesses prior to the arbitration hearing. Are we required to comply with this request, or can we tell the city that they can only question the witnesses at the hearing?
I want to preface this answer by first indicating that the results really will differ a great deal from state to state on this. All we can do is simply give you the general principles that would apply to a request like this and recommend that you seek the advice of local counsel to decide whether or not those general rules will apply to you. So what are the general rules? First of all, arbitration is generally thought to be a no discovery type process. And by no discovery process, what I mean is that a lot of the pretrial rules that you would expect to see in litigation, state court litigation, federal court litigation, simply don't apply in arbitration. It's rare, for example, that you will ever see a deposition in advance of an arbitration hearing. It's rare, for example, that you will see any obligation to exchange the names of witnesses or any pretrial document exchange, such as sending interrogatories, a list of questions from one side to another. Instead, arbitration is kind of the old west of litigation. You show up in an arbitration hearing, you learn for the first time who the witnesses are who are going to testify against you, and you attempt to handle their testimony by the seat of your pants. It's really a rough and tumble form of litigation, and it's something that a lot of lawyers and other people who try arbitration cases find perhaps as much fun as anything to do in the legal system. It's a process that some find aggravating. Now, with respect to pretrial interviews, pre-arbitration interviews of witnesses, the usual rule here would be no. There's no obligation to provide witnesses to the other side to interview on a pretrial basis. There might be the obligation, likely is the obligation, to produce documents pretrial, not because it's part of the arbitration process, but rather because part of the obligation to bargain in good faith is to exchange documents that are relevant to grievances. So there might be that obligation to exchange, for example, bargaining notes or other types of documents that would be relevant to a grievance. But the usual rule is that that obligation doesn't extend to pre-arbitration interviews of witnesses. Now, there's a little bit of a twist to this. The question that we were asked was whether or not an employer could interview employees. These are employees who happen to be union members who are going to testify for the union in arbitration, but they are still employees of the employer, and they still have information that is theoretically, we must assume, somehow relevant to their job. If it wasn't relevant to their job, they'd hardly be useful as witnesses. So it may well be that the employer has the right to insist on interviewing the union's witnesses to the extent it can identify who those witnesses might be, interview them prior to the arbitration hearing. Now it gets a little bit more complicated. What if the witness says, I will comply with your order. I will subject myself to an interview, but I want union representation during the interview. Is the employer free to say no to that request? And here we enter truly uncharted territory. This is not likely a situation where there is the right to representation under the rule that's known as the Weingarten Rule. Because the Weingarten Rule and the right to representation under the Weingarten Rule only applies when the employee reasonably believes they could be the subject of disciplinary action. In a routine grievance arbitration, you wouldn't expect a witness to be able to believe they could be subject to disciplinary action. However, testifying in arbitration is protected conduct under most labor relations statutes. And our prediction would be that without regard to the Weingarten Rule or any other source of the right to representation, our prediction would be that the results in a case like this would be A, the employer will be free to interview the employee prior to the arbitration hearing, interview the employee slash witness, that is, prior to the arbitration hearing, and B, the employee slash witness would be entitled to union representation during the interview, lest the employer run afoul of labor laws that line out what are unfair labor practices. Now, of course, that whole analysis changes if the witness is not an employee. If the witness is not an employee, the witness can simply tell the employer or the union, I'm not going to talk to you. And that's the end of the matter. And the first time that the lawyer on the other side will be able to ask questions is when he or she sees that witness for the first time in the arbitration hearing. Back to the old west of arbitration, in other words.
Here's the second question. Can a law enforcement employer restrict the free speech rights of an 18-year-old child of an officer?
This is really a fascinating question. To be sure, it's not much of an issue for those public safety employees who are under the protections of a collective bargaining agreement or civil service laws. Under those sorts of protections, an employer would likely have no authority whatsoever to regulate the speech of a child of an employee. Any attempt to use the disciplinary system to do so, to somehow punish the employee for whatever it is the child has said, would almost certainly be held to be a violation of just cause or to violate whatever civil service rule might be in place. However, there's a number of public safety employees in this country who simply have no protections under either civil service laws or collective bargaining agreements. Collective bargaining for public safety officers only exists in about, on a statewide basis, only exists in about 33, 34, depending upon how you're counting, states in the country. And there's a large swath of this country, largely in the South, where police officers, firefighters, corrections officers have no job protections whatsoever. There's no contracts, no collective bargaining agreement, no civil service rules. And the question would be, under what circumstances would an employer in those sorts of jurisdictions be free to discipline the employee for something the child has done? Well, let's start with the proposition that if you do not have the protections of a collective bargaining agreement or civil service rules, that means you're an at-will employee. And being an at-will employee means that the employment relationship can be terminated at the will of the employer. The employer can simply look at the employee and say, in best Donald Trump style, you're fired. Doesn't have to give a reason, can give any reason, so long as the underlying reason itself is not illegal. Now, that's what poses the potential problem here for an employer trying to discipline the employee for the speech of the employee's 18-year-old child. There are two scenarios. We have a fork in the road. That speech, let's make it easy. Let's say the speech is a Facebook post that is critical of the employer. Let's make this a small town sheriff's agency. And let's say that the child has posted something on Facebook that says that the sheriff is completely incompetent and a crook. Well, There are two ways to look at the speech that the child is making. Either that speech itself is entitled to constitutional protection, or it is not. What would make the speech entitled to constitutional protection? If the speech was about a matter of public interest. So it may well be that saying that the sheriff is incompetent or is engaged in illegal activities, that may well be speech that's constitutionally protected. That is speech about the political process. And speech about the political process occupies kind of the highest level in the pantheon of our free speech rights. But what if the post is something else? What if the post is simply a salacious post about the child's girlfriend or boyfriend? Has nothing whatsoever to do with a matter of public interest, which means that the speech itself would have no constitutional protection. So there's the fork in the road. Either the off-duty, well, it's all off-duty speech because it's the child's speech, either the speech is constitutionally protected or it is not. The easiest scenario is the latter one. The speech is not constitutionally protected. The speech, the salacious speech about the girlfriend or the boyfriend. In those circumstances, for at-will employees, we see no problem with the employer firing the employee for the child's speech. No problem in a legal sense, that is. But what if the speech is constitutionally protected? So that off-duty speech is speech about the political system. Let me make it as difficult as you can possibly make it. Let's say this is a speech, a Facebook post again, that endorses Barack Obama's re-election. And the sheriff is a Tea Party type Republican and wants to fire the employee for the employee's child's speech. And that, of course, is speech clearly protected by the First Amendment. Would the protections for the First Amendment for the child's speech extend to be job protections for the employee that would create an exception to the at-will employee rule? Never seen a case on it. We really don't know. There is a case, though, that's somewhat close to being on point. This is a case called Horseketter versus Department of Public Safety. And for those of you who like chapter and verse, this is the citation is 159 F3rd, Federal 3rd edition of the Federal Reporter, 1265. This is a case from 1998. I believe it's from Missouri. And in that case, a federal appeals court struck down a portion of an employer's rules. This was a state police agency that forbade political law signs at houses jointly owned by troopers and their spouses. And the reason the court did so was because the rule could impair the constitutional rights of the spouses. It would have been okay, the court said, to have a rule that just prohibited troopers from putting up lawn signs. Not all courts would agree with that, by the way, but that's what the court said. But you couldn't have a rule that somehow impaired the constitutional rights of the spouses. We could see that logic applying to an attempt to discipline an employee for the speech of the employee's child.
That wraps up this edition of the LRIS Q&A podcast. As always, we hope you found it entertaining and informative. Remember, the contents of this podcast should not be construed as legal advice. Please consult your own attorney for legal advice on any specific situation.